Welcome to back to the Daily Drum on WHUR 96.3, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. Well, no parent wants to hear of their child being bullied at school. Mothers and fathers expect their children will be safe in a safe learning environment. On the other side, there are those who are parents of the bullies. So whatever side of the aisle you're on, parents or children, what should be done? What should parents say to their children about their behavior if they're bullies? And what should they say to their kids if they are the ones being bullied? Should both sides seek help? If you have a child who is struggling with this issue, give us a call. If you're a parent struggling with what to do, give us a call. The phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Also joining us tonight for this conversation is Drew Kelechi. He's an advocate and author of Shut Up, Nobody Likes You. And Paul Vespo, he is a school psychologist. Again, the phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Mr. Kelechi and Mr. Vespo, thank you so much for being with us.
Good evening. How's it going?
Good, good. Thank you. Drew, I'm going to start with you and your story. You were bullied at a very early age. You went to a private school here in the United States and over in Nigeria. You were bullied in both areas. So this was happening to you most of your formative life. At what point did you realize that this was sort of a deeper and even maybe bigger problem that you could handle and that you went to seek help?
All right. Well, I'll say I have to set a little bit of a background for you. I was receiving some serious racism from my mother's side of the family. Okay, so my mom is white, my father is Nigerian, right? And I was born into a family that was extremely racist on my mother's side. This excluded her, of course. All right. My immediate family has been my support system, and I wouldn't be here if it were not for their love. So, but that being stated, mom was disowned by her family upon them finding out that her boyfriend and future husband was a Nigerian. And I was viewed as an unwelcome consequence of their marriage. So it's not that I was a child. No, I was a consequence. So I was living with that in my family life. And then in school, starting in the private schools of Maryland, I went through some considerable bullying there that I'd like to break down for you. So I was receiving it. There was two different places at the same time, two of the main places that a child spends their time, right? And so I had to figure out, well, I figured out very quickly that this was a problem on both fronts. So I can go into that a little deeper if you want.
Sure. And so while you were at the schools in Baltimore, you were just two black kids out of 200. And so that bullying was race-based. And at some point, when that got so bad, I guess your family then had you go to Nigeria to try to reconnect to your father's roots. And then you were bullied there because you were a lighter-skinned black boy. And because of the colorism based on colonialism, you were bullied by the darker-skinned Nigerian students because of the way you looked. So you were getting it on both ends on two different continents, correct?
Yeah, you got it. That's spot on. That's right.
All right. Mr. Vespo, in hearing Drew's story, and obviously there's much more to that, we're just kind of skimming the surface. He had issues at home and at school because of his situation. But you being a school psychologist, kids bring this into the schools, right? And so what kind of conversation, first let's talk with the children. Why does this happen, for those who are bullying and those who've been bullied? For those who are bullying, do they have some other issues that need to be addressed on why they're doing it?
I think that's a great question. And, you know, with Drew's story, I want to say it takes a lot of courage for him to share that, you know, now being an advocate and giving back to those children who need that type of support. There's a lot of research that shows that bullying is a learned behavior, right? It's something that's typically learned, whether it's in the home environment, it could be learned through other peers in external environments, such as the playground. If we're talking elementary school level, it could be learned in other settings, you know, such as, you know, high school outings, you know, parties, things of that nature. So I want to say that bullying can be a learned behavior from peers and adults. And the good news is that it can also be unlearned. And it takes a lot of knowledge. It takes a lot of self-awareness to do that. And fortunately, it could take a lot of time. We know that with bullying now, coming out of the COVID-19 pandemic, the research is quite mixed with school bullying either increasing or decreasing. We do know that there's been somewhat of a decrease in school bullying, of course, because kids were on remote instruction, right? But the part about cyberbullying, which is one, you know, facet of bullying. There's cyberbullying, there's physical bullying, there's verbal bullying. We do know that some research has shown through Harvard Graduate School of Education that there's actually been a bit of a decrease, which is actually a little bit puzzling, right? We'd wonder why it would decrease, right? And some of the researchers have claimed one reason has to do with the fact that there's more structured time, right, with remote learning. So bringing it back to the part about learning behavior and unlearning behavior, there's a large area of research that shows mental health has to do with why kids engage in bullying, right? They're dealing with strong internalizing disorders, such as an underlying personality disorder. But the biggest chance of there being any improvement is there being a line of communication between that child and a parent or some sort of role model, similar, it sounds like, to what Drew had talked about before, right? Mm-hmm. Have an immediate family to bring them up. So there is hope, right? And there is ways to unlearn it.
Right. And so for you, Drew, when you were in your school in Baltimore, and again, you were just one of two blacks in a population of students of 200, and you would have students say things to you, or you would try to sit down with your tray during the lunch hour, and when you would sit, everyone would get up or either say something to you about not wanting you to sit there and, you know, talk about your looks. What would you go to school administrators or teachers? And if so, what would the response be?
Absolutely. That would be my first course of action, because the way I was brought up, you know, physically lashing out wasn't acceptable. You handle your issues like a gentleman. You use your words. You leverage resources at the school. You know, reach out to a teacher. Let them know that something is going on. So yeah, that was my first course of action, and I'll say it did not do much good. You have to keep in mind the schools that I was at were the general population was quite wealthy. They were kids from super, super affluent families, and the teachers, unfortunately, did not want to ruffle the feathers of any of those families. So a lot of times things went unnoticed or ignored completely.
Hmm.
I'd say a good 90% of the time. And I'd like to actually give you an example, because this in particular, I appreciate you bringing up the cafeteria incident. It was particularly embarrassing. You have to understand, I was going to school with these smart, witty kids, you know, and they never made it easy when it was their turn to bully me. From grades 1 to 9, these are kids who know how to slide an insult or a comment under the teacher's radar, you know. And many times they didn't, like I said, many times the teachers ignored things, so they didn't really have to slide things under the radar, but they took their time. These kids took their time to formulate the most hurtful things to say, and then they skillfully paired those things with the most appropriate delivery for the occasion.
Hmm.
They had, and, you know, and at their disposal was an arsenal of, like, horrifying truth. Like, for instance, "Hey, Drew, why aren't you ever invited to any birthday parties at school, bro? You don't like birthday parties, huh?"
So, Paul, when you hear these stories, that, or these examples that Drew is giving, and he talked about this happening at a private school. Is the bullying different from public to private?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, we have research being collected through our federal government. It's actually, the website is stopbullying.gov. Data is collected on state and national level, you know, through private schools, public schools. Regarding private schools, I don't know off the top of my head what the statistics show about bullying prevention intervention. But to Drew's point, I will say that, you know, that the bullying absolutely, it can happen with individuals from, you know, higher socioeconomic status backgrounds, trickling down to those from lower socioeconomic status backgrounds. And again, I will hang my hat on learned behavior, right? There's a almost like that status, right, that kids want to hold, and those from maybe the high SES, I don't know, Drew, that you were experiencing, that you may have been bullied because maybe you didn't have as much money in their perception, right, or what they viewed right. you as. You know, that's learned typically at home through parents, or perhaps in parents' defense, they didn't teach the children that. You know, that just could be a perception that was given to that high SES child, maybe because they're given so many rewards, right, or so many monetary valuable things like clothing, right, or trips, vacations, socializing.
Paul, you had mentioned, we have about a minute before we go to break, and I want to be sure that you and Drew, if you have some sites or information where folks who are listening, parents or even kids, where they can go for resources. I know you mentioned stopbullying.gov. Any other places folks should go that you would recommend?
I would say sorry, Drew, you go first.
No, it's okay. You started. Go ahead.
I was just going to say there's a lot of resources through the Child Mind Institute, as well as PACER's National Bullying Prevention Center and the National Association of School Psychologists. There's a lot of resources that are going to be used for children who are experiencing bullying, those who are engaging in the bullying, and distinguishing the differences between, you know, bullying and teasing and what schools can actually do to take action, and resources for parents.
Okay, and how about you, Drew?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a reflection guide that's been created with a whole bunch of kind of like horror scenarios, worst case scenarios that might go down in a classroom. And I think it's be super, super effective. It's been tested across multiple seminars, the effectiveness in a classroom, but it gets the conversation going, which is the main thing, you know, because if somebody who's being bullied is the elephant in the room.
And what is it called again, Drew, and how can folks access it?
Oh, yeah, it's the Shut Up, Nobody Likes You Reflection Guide, and it'll be available later on, but I was just going to say, I agreed with the bullying.gov.
Okay.
That Paul mentioned that. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Hold that. We're going to pick up on that because we've got to take a quick break. But don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com, or you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. If you're on the phone line, Stephanie, stay right there. We're going to get to you. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. The original Quiet Storm with John Mons is next on 96.3 WHUR. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Tonight, our focus is on bullying in schools, what we can do to keep children safe who are being bullied, and what we can do to help those who are the bullies and help parents deal with this issue, especially as it's happening in schools. Our guests tonight are here to help guide us in this conversation, Drew Kelechi. He is an advocate and author of Shut Up, Nobody Likes You. Drew was a victim of bullying in his early years in school. And Paul Vespo, he is a school psychologist. The phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. If you've struggled with this issue, or if you're a parent looking for some guidance, this is a chance to get some advice from those who have been intimately involved in this issue. Let's go to Stephanie calling from Virginia with a question or comment. Go right ahead, Stephanie.
Hi, I'm calling on behalf of an incident that occurred today with my great nephew. He attends school in D.C. I'm not sure what's the name of his school, but I happened to be on the phone talking to my niece. And the teachers called. A young man pulled a knife out on him in school today.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so did you get any feedback from the school about what happened or what they plan to do?
I'm trying to have her join the call, actually, as we speak. But she's on the line now with the teacher, so she wasn't able to call me back to really find out what happened. But my thing is, how did this kid get the knife in the school?
Okay. Thank you so much, Stephanie, and we hope everything sort of works out for your loved one with this issue. Paul, bullying can really take some extreme measures, not just, words, but it can get physical. And I know Drew and some of the information we've read on Drew's experience, it got physical. But in this case, where Stephanie is talking about here, where bullying really can get to the point where now you have something lethal that could be involved. Are schools really sort of in a no-win situation here that you don't want a police state in the schools, but yet you still, right, have to kind of check book bags and all of this other stuff. So talk a little bit about sort of what schools are grappling with and trying to handle this bullying issue. And especially we're going to get a little bit more into cyberbullying, because that's on a whole nother level that some of us of a certain age, didn't experience.
Sure. Stephanie, I want to say first and foremost, thank you for sharing this story. I can't imagine how difficult of a time it is for you and your child, right, who's going through this. We know that, first and foremost, with federal government and legislation, there are no federal laws for bullying prevention and intervention. However, in some cases, bullying can actually overlap with discriminatory harassment, which is covered under federal civil rights laws enforced by the United States Department of Education and the United States Department of Justice. Now, I don't know off the top of my head what state laws there are in Virginia for bullying. There are state laws. I'm in New York, and we have the Dignity for All Students Act, which basically means that students in school districts, public or private, are by rights protected, need to be protected by school staff and administration. And if anything rises and gets more intense with bullying, there need to be proactive solutions, right, with the school district connecting with the families, right? So to answer, this question about what can schools do if it escalates to something with intended violence, right, with a knife, the first thing I would say is you want to do a risk or threat assessment, right? And you want to make sure that your school district has someone or a team assigned, right? Typically, it could be a school psychologist or mental health professional. There's a principal, a teacher. Has any of that happened yet? Or
are you asking Stephanie about that, Paul?
Yeah, Stephanie.
Sure. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
I'm not too sure exactly what. I guess they're trying to rectify the situation as we speak. But I was happy to have the radio on so that I can, be a part of this conversation, because it's important. This is not the first incident that occurred at his school with him. The kids pick on him and tease him. He's really shy, and he minds his own business. And, kids don't like that. They, a kid was peer pressuring someone a week or so ago to jump on him for no reason. It's ridiculous. They need some type of school resource if they have to have security officers or metal detectors or something, because, just last year, a little kid got killed. His mother dropped him off to school. And, he was pretty much a low-key kid student, and some boys was jealous of him, pulled a knife out, stabbed him, and killed him.
Hmm. Well, Stephanie, we are glad it hasn't gotten to that level with your nephew. And as I mentioned before, good luck with trying to get that issue rectified. And we appreciate, as Paul said, you sharing your story. Drew, How did you get through this bullying that you experienced in one place in Baltimore City here in the United States, and then you go thousands of miles away and you're experiencing it in the same manner, really, in Nigeria? How did you get to the point where you were able to become an author and put pen to paper and get these stories into a book form to share with the world, really?
Well, let me address the very last portion of your question, which is regarding the, you know, making the book. I listened. I obeyed my parents. For that portion, I had to bite the bullet. I had to listen to mommy and daddy. You know why? Because the bottom line is, I didn't feel like sitting down mm-hmm. for 4 hours after, you know, toiling away in school or whatever, and you know, typing things into Microsoft Word. No, that's not my idea of a splendid time. But I had to listen to them. I decided to listen to them, and it worked out great. So I believe, you know, kids, it's a great example of a success story of why obeying sometimes works out. Okay, so this is one of the things I want to stress. My coping mechanisms during this entire time, well, I guess throughout my entire life, have been faith and piano composition. Those two things, faith and piano composition, offered an escape for me, as well as a pseudo tangible, you know, product that I could reflect on and be proud of, you know, when mm-hmm. I look back on that manuscript paper or play it out. And you have to, one of the things that I had to come to terms with was I was either going to sink or swim. That was my choice. That it was left up to me. Nobody else was going to make that decision. Yeah, I definitely hear all these people saying, hey, you know, you're worthless. You're not cool. You don't have any friends, man. You speak with a lisp. And your hair is weird, by the way. What's up with that spongy hair, man? How come it grows outward when you comb it? That's weird. What are you doing, man? Are you combing your hair? Is that a pick? Do they call that a pick? You know, all those things that I'm going through. I had to tell myself, all right, man, look, I might not have the grade. I might not have the friends, but I'm going to have the grades, for example. And I
But you didn't, it sounded like, Drew, that you didn't have the, maybe you did have the full support at home. Maybe it was your extended family where you weren't finding that support when you went to your mother's family's home. But in your nuclear home, being a product of an interracial relationship, you had the support at home when you left
100%.
School? Okay. And so
100%.
Was
home,
that the...
Home is...
Yeah. And that was the delineating factor. Is that what you feel like got you through? Because you could come home to a place of safety and support and understanding.
Undoubtedly. It definitely, I mean, I don't know where I'd be. That's why I said, you know, they're my rock. They've been my support system. And if I did not have a home with a loving mother and father and a loving brother, it probably would be a different story. But it worked out. And the bottom line is, for me, I think the takeaway is, it gets better. You know, it gets better. Yeah, we all have our own personal struggles. We all go, the bottom line is, we, all of us have experienced a degree of rejection or exclusion, or if you've ever felt, you know, anxious for some reason, or you just don't fit in, that's something that's not unique to one person. And we just have to understand, for me, I had to make the choice to work through it. I didn't want to sink.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Phone lines are open tonight. We're talking about bullying in schools and what that means for those who've been bullied and those who are the bulliers. I think that's the right word for that. And the parents, how do they deal with that? How should they seek help for their children? And do parents need support in trying to sort of manage through this? Paul, when we talk about support, and especially for students, those who've been bullied, and the encouragement, say, of peer support, What's your sense of where they can get that? Should they look to the schools for that, or is that something outside services they should be doing in terms of counseling and seeking? Should they be looking for the schools for that support, or really look outside of the walls of the school?
I think it could be both. I think you could find it, like Drew was saying, you know, he was able to find some educators that helped him, empower him, right? And then some immediate family members. It could also be as simple as someone who's the school custodian, the school nurse, the school secretary, anyone who has been a positive influence on that child, right? Who's been enduring so much pain. And to Drew's point about rejection, rejection is one of the key ingredients to why children engage in bullying, right? So if it means that the child needs more supplemental support through special education services, through an individualized education program, which we call an IEP, or as simple as just checking in with the school psychologist, social worker, counselor, doing a brief check-in, check-out session, that's fine as well. We do know that research shows that when children feel empowered and they feel if somebody's listening to them, it could be someone, one person or multiple people inside and outside of school, they feel rejuvenated, and the effects of bullying actually can mitigate as well.
Drew, being a victim of bullying, if parents are listening here, are there signs that parents should look for if their child has been bullied? Can they tell? Is there some change in them in terms of their behavior?
That's a great question. To tell you the truth, I'm not a parent yet. I hope to be one day. Mm-hmm. So I can't speak from my own experience from that perspective. But I will say it's tough, especially when the vast majority of bullying that a child will experience inevitably will be within, you know, a school. It's not, I mean, sometimes it is within the home. Now, if it's within the home, it's obvious. You can figure that out. But when it's within a school and you might not, as a parent, necessarily have access to that school while it's in session, mm-hmm. it can be tricky. But obvious signs are, you know, for me, if I'm thinking about it, if my kid isn't themselves, you know, ask them questions, start a discussion. And that seems to be one of the most important things, one of the most important takeaways, the ability to have a discussion. And I think I'll give you an example of where a discussion for me would have been particularly helpful. So back in Nigeria, right, I was in my final year of schooling, and I can vividly recall that year. The boarding house master at the time was also the school's chemistry teacher, and he did not like me at all. And he put me on kitchen duty for an entire year. And I mean,
why didn't he like you, Drew? Or why do you believe he didn't like you?
Well, he would say, let me start with words from his own mouth. Oi, bo Pepe, we go show you fire, extra, extra. This one no be Marilando, Niger go deal with you. Mosquito go chop finish, like your pimple head. All right, so basically the translation is like, yeah, hey, extra white man, that's what Oibo Pepe means. White boy, super white man. You're gonna see the fire, you're gonna get malaria from the mosquitoes, and you basically have a bunch of pimples on your face. That's the translation. I remember when he told me that. Wow. And he used to yank the cords from the back of the box television in the living room and whip me like a slave. I don't know if you've ever been hit with the plug end of a power cable.
No.
But yeah. Pretty, it's pretty painful. I have those scars.
Wow.
Yeah.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about bullying in schools in all forms, and it can be devastating. And just sort of the story Drew just shared with us, the extent that it can get to. So, Drew, we are so happy that you're with us and you were able to survive and make it through that. We're talking about that issue tonight, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'd like to hear from you, questions or comments, if you've experienced bullying, or if you need some guidance on how to handle it. We're going to take a quick time out and continue this conversation right after this quick break. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I am Bramante Bryant. Tonight, our topic is bullying, bullying in schools in particular. I want to ask you, Paul Vespo, Drew's issue and his bullying in most cases, I'm assuming, had a racial component to it. Is that more prevalent, less prevalent? Is it different when it has that component, or is it just one other aspect of bullying? Does it take on a different dimension once we interject or inject race into it?
I will say I do not know the research as to whether, you know, how much race plays into bullying. I will say from experience as a school psychologist working in diverse school districts and areas that I have noticed that there's definitely, you know, sometimes you will notice race comes into play. And I will go back to the phrase I've said throughout this whole night, learn behavior, right? I've noticed students, you know, Caucasian students, among students, African-American, Hispanic, different races, you know, different ethnicities, and multifaceted races and ethnicities are mixed, right? The engagement amongst those peers changing. I will say one thing I do think is important to keep in mind is that teachers and educators promoting a positive school climate for all students, right, and having open dialogues, especially at the high school level, right, when they're about to leave and go off into adulthood and either go to college or the workforce or what have you, that is critical. That brings students from different walks of life, whether we're talking about race, ethnicity, socioeconomic status, together, and how it helps them feel united. You know, I worked at a detention center as a school psychologist, to give you an example, and a lot of students that came in there were predominantly African-American males, which, you know, that's a larger discussion. We could say that that's a systems issue, noticing that, right? And I did notice what I learned was having a few Caucasian males being placed in that detention system, there's definitely you know, this behavior of trying to assimilate to the culture, right, through the Caucasian kids, and feeling embraced, right, through those that were African-American. What I'm trying to say was that it was very multifaceted, right? I think the biggest, and I'm no expert in that area, but I will say the biggest thing that we could do in the school system is to cultivate open dialogues and conversations about race, ethnicity, politics, in a guided direction so that children do not feel afraid to participate in them. And keep in mind, they're children, right? And they're learning, right? The brain doesn't stop forming until at least 25, but research shows that's getting changing, maybe into the early 30s. So we want to cultivate open dialogues in a safe space in the school environment in order for all children to feel accepted.
Some statistics, Drew, say that bullying is more prevalent in middle school than in high school, with almost one in three students reporting incidents in the sixth grade. Did you experience bullying differently in middle school versus high school? Was your experience like what these statistics say?
It's funny you should mention sixth grade, because sixth grade was actually the beginning for me of the more verbal, more aggressive verbal bullying.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, like, making fun of me in front of girls or you know, girls I had a crush on, mm-hmm. those kind of thoughtful things. Yeah, that became far more prevalent in sixth grade. So it's interesting you bring that particular grade up. But I am an anomaly, because my high school experience was basically straight up jail. I mean, it was fight, or within my first year, I'd already survived a couple attempts on my life. But I do want to actually loop back just real briefly. When you mentioned if there's a difference when the bullying is racially based,
mm-hmm.
I think that yes, I think there is a difference when it's racially based, because race is something that you can't change. It's not like your body weight or your height. And it is particularly painful because it can't be changed, and there's an entire culture behind that racism. It's funny. I can actually hear my family members right now. It's wild, you know, and I can hear, well, we told him to go back to Africa. By golly, he went back to Africa. Mm-hmm. I'm just peachy with that. Oh, wait, one problem. He came back. I can vividly hear them saying that. And, oh, and by the way, I think the ability to look back on my horrendous experiences and have a chuckle is essential, has been essential for me to remain happy and peaceful. Just a disclaimer there, because I don't think it's normal to be able to kind of laugh that kind of thing off.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, just the trauma of what you've shared already. Paul, is it different with boys versus girls in terms of bullying?
The research is, you know, physical, you know, bullying, you know, is evidence. You know, we see boys doing it more. However, girls can absolutely do it just as much. And mind you, you know, it's based on our perceptions, right? Like, you know, girls can be more innocent than boys, which is obviously not the case, right? Always. But this is based on self-reported data. You know, and I want to say, too, I agree with what, to Drew's point, it is important to consider race as one element or reason for why bullying happens. It's important, again, I seek to have those open lines of communication open, and for there to be, again, I'm going to stress it, a positive school climate, right, where you're having students join clubs and doing student social justice committees, and also getting teachers involved and promoting these open dialogues and hard conversations to have based on what has been learned in the home environment. So, but to go back to boys and whether gender comes into play, again, a lot of it is based on self-reported data, mind you. Boys and girls can collectively engage in physical bullying. Cyberbullying is actually has been a major issue through Twitter, TikTok videos, other social media outlets, for sure.
All right. Before we leave, I do want to make sure that, again, we give our listeners any kind of resources that they can tap into sort of to help them move through these issues. Again, whether you're being bullied or whether you are a bully, whether you're a parent of a bully, or whether you're a parent of a child who's been bullied, oftentimes, as one of our callers called in, they're just looking for any kind of guidance to help them. So, Drew, again, if you can share with us anything that you would recommend, and you can feel free to repeat what you talked about earlier in the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll stray a little bit from what I said earlier. The Shut Up, Nobody Likes You is, I think, it's an indispensable tool. If you cannot afford it, I'm more than happy to give you a free copy. However, right now, it has been, I think, very effective in expressing the gravity of you know, the situation at hand and how people can kind of relate.
And how
right now,
how
right
can
now
they,
75%.
How can they get your book, Drew?
Yes, sir. Right now, it's available on Amazon, and I wanted to mention that 75% of the revenue is going towards my anti-bullying program, but 75% of it, and I'm currently working to establish that in BCPS schools, Baltimore County Public Schools, Baltimore City Public Schools, and so please purchase copies for yourself and your loved ones. It's highly therapeutic, and like I said, if you can't afford it, I'm more than happy to send you a free copy, but going towards a good cause.
And very quick,
one resource I know. Yeah.
And very quickly, Paul, that website that you had given earlier, can you repeat that?
Yes. If you go to Google, you could any internet browser, you could type in the Child Mind Institute. There's a lot of evidence-based resources and practices that we can cultivate in the school climate for our children who are experiencing bullying, who are engaging in bullying, and for parents and other individuals who are interested in what they can do. A lot of resources there. There's also more resources on the National Association
a school psychologist's website. Simply write MASP on an internet browser. And then lastly, we have PACERS, National Bullying Prevention Center, which continues to have growing research on what to do with bullying.
All right. Thank you so much. Drew Kelechi, author and advocate, author of Shut Up, Nobody Likes You, and Paul Vespo, school psychologist. Thank you both so much for sharing your insight with us tonight.
Thank you very much.
That's the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, March 30th. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Have a great night.